The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is State Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat from New York's 39th Senate District, which includes the city of Newburgh. Senator Skoufis is chair of the Senate Committee on Investigations and Government Operations. Welcome back, Senator. You're one of our favorite guests. I'm so happy you're with us.
You're not just one of my favorite hosts. You are my favorite host. I'm delighted to be back.
It doesn't get any better than that. Who are you investigating lately?
Really just jumping right into it, are you?
Put another way, if you told me, you'd have to kill me.
We have a couple of issues that we're looking into right now. One is ongoing, and it has been for a little while now, and that's the alleged issues with the new Tappan Zee Bridge, a.k.a. the Mario Cuomo Bridge. We've got some smaller but still important stuff cooking, too. Right now, it's a little bit esoteric, but you'll find it interesting in that you know we pass every single year all these bills directing agencies, directing state government to study oftentimes important issues, study this, study that. And I'll tell you, I've been in the legislature for 9 years. I have yet to see one of these results, one of these studies, come back to the legislature after we pass these bills directing others to evaluate an issue. And so my committee and I, we are taking a look at what's happened with all these studies that cost, by the way, taxpayer dollars.
You bet.
So we've got some stuff cooking and more to come, no doubt.
Well, that would be a change not only in the way that the legislature does its business, the Senate and the Assembly, but also the way the United States Congress does it, because there are always all of these investigations going on. And then we don't ever see the results of them. The results may be on some shelf gathering dust somewhere, but I think you're onto something here.
Yeah, that's right. And look, when you pass a bill that requires a study of something, it makes for a nice press release. But if we're actually interested in, the government and the work at hand, it's important to find out what happens on the other end of that study. And people just don't, to your point, sits on a shelf. If it gets done at all, I don't even know if these studies happen. We'll find out.
Senator, now that Andrew Cuomo is out in the Hamptons, we hear, I read that in the New York Post, you must feel like you're on vacation.
So I think the New York Post is tailing the guy. They seem to be following him ever since he's left. And look, we're not on vacation. We were just in session yesterday, taking up an important set of bills, actually having to do with eviction and open meetings law reforms. And so far from it, but no doubt about it, it's a new day in Albany. And I think most of my colleagues are looking forward to a more refreshing relationship, a healthier relationship between the legislature and the executive.
I'm going to ask you an Alan question, which I hope will not tick you off. Now that you're done with Cuomo, will you be paying as much attention? Have we learned our lesson about not overseeing what a governor does if you're the legislature?
So, look, I think that we in the legislature, to your question, we have an opportunity here to really start anew, reset, and make sure that we are the co-equal branch that the Constitution requires of us, especially during budget time. And yes, there's some case law, Silver v. Pataki, that puts a lot of power in the hands of the executive during the budget process. But I think that we have a chance to be a true partner with the new governor. She seems to want to be far more collaborative than her predecessor. And look, we should be flexing our muscles in the legislature. We are a co-equal branch. We need to act like it.
So I'm assuming the intent is there, but are you also grateful? My question, I guess I should try to put it in perspective. Are you also grateful to have gotten rid of Andrew, because you were real tough on him, I know that, that you may be giving a pass to the new governor?
Certainly not. And first of all, I wouldn't characterize it as, you know, grateful that Andrew Cuomo is gone. You know, what happened is really a stain on our state's history. I think there's a chance for a refreshing relationship, but let's not celebrate over what happened to the governor. What happened to him was a very sorry episode of his administration and of New York State history. But by no means are we going to be giving anyone a pass. Look, you know, I think that certainly the committee that I chair, but all of us in the legislature, where we can work with the new governor, I think we certainly welcome that. I certainly welcome that. But where we disagree, we're going to make sure that our voices are heard and that our position is made known. And for me personally, look, if there are issues that require examination, whether it's Andrew Cuomo or Kathy Hochul or the next governor, or whoever it is in the executive, we have a role to play. And part of that role is oversight.
And is some of that your fault? I don't mean yours, Senator. You know how much respect I have for you. But is it some of the legislature's fault that they haven't used those oversight advantages that they have?
I do think, I don't know if I'm going to characterize it as anyone's fault, but I do think that that oversight has been, previous, especially to the current Senate majority, was significantly underutilized. And keep in mind, the previous majority was a Republican majority. We've done more oversight with a Democratic governor than the Senate Republicans did with a Democratic governor. And so it's not even really a partisan approach. It's more of an institutional issue that oversight had been so underutilized. You know, I, as chair of the Investigations Committee, and Andrea Stewart-Cousins, we've really started to change the culture of that oversight tool. And look, you know, part and parcel, and this is something we haven't done, but I hope we do, and I've been banging this drum for 9 years since I've been in the legislature. There should be oversight, and we also should be looking to override, as in override vetoes, when there's some bills that pass unanimously, 150-0, 63-0 in the Senate, and 213 members say yes, and then one person says no, and we say, okay, we'll get them next time. That doesn't make any sense, and that goes back to my point before about acting like a co-equal branch of government. I hope we do more oversight, and I hope we begin to override vetoes and make it known that we don't just accept no from one person as an answer if there's overwhelming support in the legislature to do something.
In a recent interview with Majority Leader in the Assembly, Peeble Stokes, she made the point that the leaders can't act on their own. They have to go back to their people and ask, you know, what their opinion is. But I have always known that, you know, you get three people in a room and they got to negotiate. You don't go running back each time to your conference. What do you make of that?
So I largely agree with the majority leader.
Right.
And look, you know, as a rank and file legislator here, of course, I'm going to be biased.
Sure.
Of course, I have a role. Of course, my colleagues have a role. To your point, yes. End of the day, you have leaders meetings with the governor around budget time, around major issues. Senior staff who's oftentimes working through the nitty gritty of details. But top line stuff, yes, no on major issues. Those questions come back to the conference. And, you know, look, I've sat in conferences that have gone on for 6, 7, 8 hours long in the Assembly and in the Senate. In the Senate, you know, it's a little bit less unwieldy because there are just fewer of us. You know, there are 43 Senate Democrats versus, I think, 107 Assembly Democrats. And so the conversation, the discussion, the debate, sometimes the arguments are absolutely happening around issues that direct the leadership about how to operate when they do get in that room. Because, yes, you know, you can't have 107 Assembly Democrats in a room with, you know, the governor negotiating. That's nonsense. So you've got to direct leadership how to negotiate. And that does happen.
I have to admit, even though I probably shouldn't, that years and years ago, I worked for the Senate minority for Senator Orenstein. And I was incredibly impressed by the rooms you guys meet in. Those are really august Does it ever impress you that, you know, you go along with your whole life based on the surroundings you're in?
It never gets old. So it's my ninth year, like I said, and I maintain, I've said this before, and I maintain, we work in the most ornate, beautiful Capitol building, state Capitol building in the country. And everyone who gets to work there, members, staff, you know, visitors who come by, we're very fortunate to be able to work in such a beautiful place.
Okay, I want to ask you a whole bunch of things. Number one, we've just gone through Hurricane Ida. New York did a little bit better. Well, actually, the city didn't do very well than New Jersey, where my daughter lives. And so what are your impressions about what we have to do to make sure we're prepared the next time one of these comes through?
So look, you know, there's a fork in the road here, and we've been at it for quite a few years now. We either start to invest, spend the money it's a large investment to make our infrastructure, to make our transportation systems, to make our buildings more resilient when these storms happen, and they're happening more frequently, or we continue to pay the cost of cleanup and repairs, et cetera, after each and every one of these storms. I happen to think the first option is the wiser investment. And so we just have to do more of that. And we're not doing enough of it. And look, you know, it all comes back to climate change. But, you know, it requires investment. We have to spend money. We have a DOT capital plan that's about to be negotiated. I hope this is front and center. When the federal infrastructure bill comes down, we have those state DOT capital plan negotiations. We've got to start talking about how to make our state more resilient.
We are talking to State Senator James Skoufis. When our subways are inundated the way that they are, and we have to pay for the cleanup, what can be done so that the horrific scenes of water pouring into subway tracks, you know, are somehow dealt with?
Well, we need to stop driving away professionals like Andy Byford, for starters, and have a state government and an executive that is collaborating with the MTA and not pushing around its professionals and its experts who are trying to do the right thing and make the MTA and the subways and let's not forget the commuter lines that often get shut down after these storms, including some that I represent. We need to work with those professionals and not drive political decisions. That's for starters. And look, you know, the MTA got bailed out by the federal government, as the state did, as local governments did, from the COVID relief bill earlier this year. And it would be wise of us to start to use some of that money, a lot of that money. We have an MTA capital plan. I spoke with a DOT capital plan, an MTA capital plan that hardens the system. I've seen the videos, just like you have and so many other people online, of water gushing into the subways, and people, they're so used to it by now, they're on the subway platform and they don't even flinch anymore. that's a sad testament to how used to this horrific kind of a scene people are used to in New York City. And so it all comes down to spending the money, the investment up front. It's going to cost more on the back end after dealing with these cleanups and these repairs after each and every storm.
Senator James Skoufis, the special session. What did you talk about in that special session? What got done? What about the fact that Governor Kathy Hochul's first bill extending New York's eviction moratorium, including language that suspends New York's open meeting law? Can you give us an inside look at what happened there?
Yeah. So, in fact, I'm pulled over on the side of the thruway on my way home from session yesterday. And look, we did two things. One, we had to address the Supreme Court case, the recent case that effectively ended the national and before that our state's eviction moratorium. And then the second is, as you pointed out, we took a look at the open meetings law with the Delta variant spiking and numbers going up everywhere. We wanted to provide the same authorization to local governments and public bodies that existed at the peak of the pandemic this past year, which is you can do your meetings remotely. It's not permanent. It's through January 15th, and it's to make sure that we try and keep these numbers down and we're not congregating people in town board meetings and city council meetings, et cetera, if they don't want to congregate. But on the eviction issue, look, you know, it's a delicate balance. You have landlords on one side, especially small landlords, who are so frustrated if they have tenants that haven't been able to pay or haven't paid over the past now 17 months. But on the other hand, you do have tenants with genuine COVID-related hardships. Hopefully there are fewer and fewer of them as the days and weeks and months go on, but you still have thousands of tenants who at no fault of their own, in many cases, simply can't pay their bills. And so we had to extend the eviction moratorium. I do think we were able to strike a better balance than the last time we extended it by inserting some provisions. For example, now if a tenant is inflicting damage on their property, on the unit they're living in, the landlord can now evict that tenant that's trashing their apartment. Additionally, I fought very hard for a provision where if the landlord is challenging the tenant's hardship declaration in court and the hardship stands, the judge finds for the tenant, the judge must now require that tenant to apply for the rental assistance program. The worst situation here is when you've got a tenant who can't pay, but nevertheless still is not applying, and they have to apply for rental relief to make their landlord whole. The judge now has to require that tenant to apply for the rental relief on their landlord's behalf. So I think we struck a balance here. Am I happy with every detail in the bill? No, but it's something we had to do.
I mean, I can understand saying you can't kick the tenant out, but shouldn't the state just say, since we're saying you can't kick anybody out, we should do the paying to the landlord?
Well, so effectively, that's what we're trying to do. There's an application process. We've got $2.3 billion from the federal government. Now we have $250 million on top of that in state money. So we're talking $2.5 billion to make the landlords whole and to make the tenants effectively whole, too, by getting the money that they owe to the landlords paid out. And so, yes, you know, we're saying, yes, you cannot evict these folks, but we have public dollars here, tax dollars, to help with this emergency crisis. But I'll tell you, it's been a disgrace how this relief program has been rolled out. The last administration, they dragged their feet. They did not get the system up running. There are glitches, and that's in large part why we have to extend the moratorium, is because the money has not been flowing out in the manner that it must. Only a few hundred million dollars of the $2.5 billion has gotten out the door, and it's because this program was not prioritized by the Cuomo administration. Kathy Hochul has repeatedly said this is a top priority, and so effectively this extension of the moratorium is in large part to buy time to get this money out the door.
Okay. I want to ask you something you referred to before, but I want to go back to it, and that is the matter of open government. Clearly, people make decisions based on conversations, how do you assure open government? And I think to some degree it applies to the legislature. I mean, we don't know what you guys are doing all the time. Is there a way to make that better?
There's always a way to improve upon transparency and how government is operating. And look, there are plenty of bills. In fact, most of them, they come through the Government Operations Committee that I chair, having to do with open meetings law and FOIL, which is in desperate need of updating. And so how do we make it better? Look, I think, for example, one place that Kathy Hochul can do a lot better than her predecessor is responding to FOIL requests. You have journalists, you have members of the legislature, my colleagues and I, average citizens. They ask for documents. They ask for information from agencies and other state entities. And maybe a year and a half later, they'll get an answer. A year and a half later, they'll see those documents. And by then, the issue is no longer relevant. So, a lot of the law is already there, but it's disregarded. And what's the only recourse that a journalist or a legislator or a member of the public has? A private right of action. They've got to go find a lawyer. They've got to pay for an attorney and spend months in court to get information that they're entitled to from their government, from their representatives. And so without even changing the law, the new governor can direct her agencies, can direct state government to just simply follow the law. That would be a good start.
Senator James Kufis, what grade would you give the legislature itself? Because, you know, people don't always love the legislature. What grade would you give them for openness?
I think that we've done a lot over the past few years. The new majority leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, she's made this a hallmark of her tenure so far, and being responsive and being open. Is there room for improvement? There's always room for improvement. So, you know, I won't give an A+, maybe we'll give an A-. And you know, commit ourselves to continuing to try and do more.
I don't know about you, but when I went to school, I would have taken an 8- gratefully. Okay, let's talk a little bit about marijuana. Special session was also an opportunity for Governor Hochul to appoint members, and two of them were of color, or were black, to the Cannabis Control Board, which will kickstart the new legal market in New York. Is that a good idea?
It is. I supported it. These nominations should have taken place back in March or April. We passed the bill.
Why didn't they?
Because the governor was distracted with his own problems, just like he was distracted away from getting the rental relief money out the door. And government was at the executive level largely paralyzed because of what was going on with him and his sphere. And so we are way delayed. We're 4, 5, 6 months delayed here, and I'm glad now that the governor sent us nominees. We appointed them, we confirmed them yesterday, and my hope is now that we can finally get started on this. You know, the overriding, the overwhelming marijuana question that I get back home is, when's it going to be ready? And I haven't had an answer for folks because we didn't even have a chair of the board. We didn't have an executive director of the agency to start filling staff roles and begin to develop regs. But now we do. And so hopefully we're on the right track.
Well, James Kufis, you can always tell them to come to my state, Massachusetts, where we've been doing this for years.
And I don't want to tell them to go to other states.
And we'll take the tax money. Just kidding, of course. Let's talk a little bit about Governor Cuomo's appointees to the J-COPE. Some people refer to it as J-Joke. It's supposed to keep public officials in line. And we know that the governor appointed his friends to the J-COPE group, and a couple have resigned now. Perhaps that's a sign the appointees weren't neutral? What do you think?
I think you hit the nail on the head there, Alan. And it's the worst kept secret in state government that the J-COPE gubernatorial appointees were not neutral. And even now, they're sort of just starting to backtrack on some previous decisions. They're now looking at the book deal that they had previously chosen not to look at. And so look, at the end of the day here, there needs to be a revamp. Senator Krueger, one of my colleagues, has a constitutional amendment that would create a truly independent watchdog. I support that constitutional amendment. I'm sure there are other alternative ideas that would be far superior to what we have in place right now. But clearly, J-COPE is not doing its job. It's held in very low esteem by the public, by reporters, by, quite frankly, the legislature. And we need to do far better.
Who would appoint them? That seemed to be the big problem. Cuomo was appointing his own babysitters, if for want of a better term. In other words, they weren't going to rule against him, were they?
Clearly. We had some testimony at a hearing that Senator Biagi hosted recently. And, you know, the reoccurring theme was that, yes, you know, his appointees were obviously not independent. His appointees were trying to actively squash, any potential investigations, any potential inquiries into his activity. And it's J-COPE, I believe, fundamentally is impossible to operate as an independent entity, given the gubernatorial appointments and the history. And so we just have to completely trash it and start all over, in my opinion.
So who will make the appointments?
That's a fundamental question. I don't know what the best avenue is for appointments because, look, you know, you can't have appointees be independent of you know the people who are appointing them.
Yes, we have just seen.
Just you know that's. Exactly. So I don't have an answer for you, but that is something that needs to be addressed. We can't have Jake Hope or whatever entity is created members be appointed by folks that Jake Hope is responsible for looking at. So it's got to be an appointment by other folks. I don't know who other folks are, but it can't be by the very individuals that the entity is tasked with looking at.
Okay, for a final question, we hear that the Buffalo Bills want to build a new stadium with public funds. Should the state continue to put taxpayer money into sports stadiums when the funding should go to more worthy causes?
So I think this is going to be a significant issue for the budget negotiations in a number of months. And look, you know, the Buffalo Bills, I'm reminded by Senator Kennedy and Senator Ryan, is the only New York team, so to speak, in terms of having a presence here in the state. And I know that keeping them here is of utmost importance for them and for Western New York. Now, they're looking for over $1 billion. I think that is an enormous amount of public tax money. And so this is an issue that's got to be scrutinized. I'm not opposed to spending any money. But let me also remind your listeners that we actually spend money on the Buffalo Bills, subsidize them every year. This is not just, okay, a new ask. Hey, we want a new stadium. Can you chip in? We actually subsidize the Bills every single year in the state budget. And so I think there needs to be a very real, robust conversation. I think there is space to be helpful. But we have to scrutinize the ask, see what our capacity is. And honestly, like, you know, see what the Buffalo Bills are willing to put up. We, you know, they should not expect that we're going to foot the entire bill here. So I think there's more to come on that. And I do know, though, it's very important for my Western New York colleagues.
We are out of time. Our guest has been the remarkable Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat from New York's 39th Senate District. Senator Skoufis, I love having you on the program, and I'm going to tell you why. Because you don't fool around. You answer the question. And that is so helpful. Thanks so much for joining us.
I love being on your program anytime. Thank you, Alan.